Why are police photographing our license plates?
What are we doing for veterans returning home damaged physically and mentally, suffering from depression, homelessness, and suicide?
Why did the Supreme Court deposit corporate money into our electoral process?
Should we redefine middle class as working poor? Or is it just another Wall Street merger?
What's really behind new voter picture ID laws in certain states?
Why aren't NBC, ABC, CBS, and Fox asking these questions?
Welcome to the Reasonable Voice radio show. I'm your host, Marcello Rolando, the Reasonable Voice. The mission of the Reasonable Voice is to connect the dots between politics and finance, the need for better and more affordable education, our humanity, world peace, and of course, the arts, which we then gladly provide our listeners, the voting public, as informative food for thought to provoke their self-determination and appetite for equal economic opportunity and justice for all without truth decay. The Reasonable Voices are advocates prioritizing education, preserving our history, leading by example for a peaceful and prosperous world by evoking and embracing both creative artists and political unity as solutions to our challenges. Good afternoon and welcome to the Reasonable Voices radio show. My guest today is Eileen Davis. Now, Eileen Davis and I go way back for a lot of good reasons, one of which, she is a registered nurse, and that's a great accomplishment in itself, especially since she was on the show some months ago when everyone was going crazy about Ebola, and Eileen straightened us out. She gave us the straight story and the truth and, calmed the waters. She had a great deal to do with that. But Eileen Davis is also the co-founder of WomenMatter.org, and that's something you want to think about because most of us, as was I until I met Eileen, think that the Equal Rights Amendment is already part of the Constitution, giving women equal rights, privileges, etc., gender pay, equality, etc., but it's not so. Eileen, good afternoon. How are you?
Good afternoon, Marcello. I'm fine, but I would like to say what we are called Women-Matter.org is it Dash Matters, because that's the only way you'll get to the right website.
Got you. Women-matter.org. I'm looking right at it. I didn't say that. Thank you for that correction.
Yes.
And how...
our resources, we've got a lot of documents that are there for people to use. Our site functions as an education site because we really believe that education is the key to getting this issue out there, because what we're dealing with are two things regarding the Equal Rights Amendment, Marcello.
Uh-huh.
One is the power of inertia.
Yes.
The Equal Rights Amendment, inertia is a powerful force, and we're trying to break through that inertia. And the idea that the Equal Rights Amendment has been stalled since 1982, when a ratification deadline was imposed upon it. And the other is a knowledge deficit. As you already stated, that 72% of Americans think the Equal Rights Amendment is already constitutional law, and that is incorrect. It is not. And 97% think that it should be. What we're really dealing with here is a knowledge deficit. And the knowledge deficit correction is the key to stopping the inertia.
Exactly. I couldn't agree more. And to make our point, there are people who think it's already law, and then there are people who don't think it needs to be law because women are already equal. Educate them. First of all, we can start with the Supreme Court Justice's opinions on that.
Well, the fact is that the 14th Amendment, which is what people usually will say to me, is the 14th Amendment is the Equality Amendment. Well, if you look at the 14th Amendment, Section 1 says all persons, which it sounds pretty inclusive, right?
Mm-hmm.
But Section 2 is a big old walk back. And in Section 2 of the 14th Amendment, which is one of the largest, longest amendments in the Constitution, specifically because the Section 2 is a big old fuss.
Mm.
And what they have in Section 2 is the word male citizen and male inhabitant three times.
Mm.
And the reason that they have that is that it was written to convey equality to freed black male after the Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
It did not convey equality of rights to freed black females, nor white females, nor brown females, nor any female.
Mm-hmm.
So what that really was that was the amendment that brought men, all men, into the Constitution, but continued to exclude women. And what I say to people is that the 14th Amendment in and of itself was enough to equalize women in the Constitution, we would not have even needed the 19th Amendment.
Exactly.
But in fact, we needed the 19th Amendment to give women the right to vote, because that was the only carve-out right for women that was ever added to the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
And that becomes interesting historically, because Alice Paul wrote the 19th Amendment. And she wrote, the right to vote shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or any other state on account of sex.
Mm.
Now, she at the time also wrote the 20th Amendment, what she expected to be the 20th Amendment. And the 20th Amendment was equality of rights shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or any other state on account of sex.
Yes.
What she planned at the time was to get the right to vote. And it's like any other thing you take on, like, all right, we're going to do this big project.
Yes.
We're going to do this first, because this is the most important. Then we're going to go back and fix everything else. She saw franchising women the right to vote as the first step, and that bringing in full equality rights via an equal rights amendment as Part B,
mm-hmm.
which she admitted the 20th Amendment. Here we are almost 100 years later, and we still don't have Part B. But the problem is as time goes on, women think that we do and we don't. And it's important that women understand that that never happened.
Mm-hmm.
And we love the Constitution, and we want to be in it.
Well, you know, why don't...
By getting back to your statement, though, I'm sorry.
That's all right. That's okay. Go ahead.
Justice Scalia himself and Justice Ginsburg, now those two can't agree on what pizza order for lunch.
Yeah.
They agree on this. Justice Scalia said, when he was challenged about why he voted against the Lilly Ledbetter Act, and he said, and I'm paraphrasing but pretty much quoting,
mm-hmm.
he said, the Constitution does not prohibit against discrimination based on gender. I was under no obligation to do so. And Justice Ginsburg has also said the same thing. As a matter of fact, as recently as December's Time magazine, she was quoted talking about the Equal Rights Amendment and how we still need the Equal Rights Amendment.
Yes.
So the two of them are on that, and the other justices have not weighed in either way.
Well, the point is, though, with those two justices, ultimately, they are the ones to interpret what is constitutional and what is in the Constitution. And if they make a statement that women are not protected in the Constitution with the privileges of full citizenship without an ERA amendment to the Constitution, well, then I think that's enough to say we need to be doing what you and people like you are doing. What are you doing for the 2016 elections? It's fast upon us, obviously. Who are you supporting? Who's supporting you?
Well, we have a couple of interesting things going on. And getting back to your point about unequivocal, you know, people are saying, well, we can interpret the Constitution to convey equality. But we don't want to be interpreted because, as you pointed out so astutely, as long as you can be interpreted to not be included, you can interpret to be included, it is time for women to be unequivocally granted gender equality, unequivocally,
yes.
not interpretively. But what we are doing now, we have a lot of interesting things coming up in Virginia, and we at Women Matter have been at this for quite a number of years, and it's important to tell your audience that in the last 4 out of 5 years, we have passed the Virginia Senate with bipartisan support passing the Equal Rights Amendment,
yes.
only to be stalled in the House of Delegates.
Yes.
By a speaker and by a committee that will not let it out of subcommittee, even after it passes in the Senate and goes back to the House of Delegates on crossover. They absolutely refuse to talk about it. Now, we have the support of the League of Women Voters, the American University, American Association of University Women. We have a lot of groups in Virginia that support what we are trying to do, and we have built a very strong coalition of groups.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things fighting in this election cycle is that the League of Women Voters in the state of Virginia has added a question about the Equal Rights Amendment to the Vote 411 candidate opinion form.
Uh-huh.
They send out letters to all candidates asking about their positions on different issues, so that the voter can look and see where does that candidate, you know, how do my views align with their views?
Exactly.
And for the first time, the Equal Rights Amendment has a position on that candidate survey form. So we're very, very excited about that, which raises, the issue of knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Because what I have found is delegates and senators are not versed in this issue, particularly the young ones. I've had them say to me, I had one Republican in Henrico say to me, well, I believe in the Equal Rights Amendment, I think, but I've never had it put in front of me, so I've never really drilled down and looked at all of the minutia of it, and I'll be honest with you, I thought it was already in place, but I've never really looked at it because it never gets in front of me as a bill, and it's just, no, I have 1,400 bills I have to consider. I'm not going to look at a bill that I'm not being asked to vote on.
You know, for a moment, because I know you can do this, even if you paraphrase, can you give us the ERA amendment? I mean, it's like one of the shortest statements any legal document could be. Go.
Oh, the Equal Rights Amendment can be tweeted. The Equal Rights Amendment states, equality of rights shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or any other state on account of sex. That is the Equal Rights Amendment. Part 2 of the Equal Rights Amendment is this ratification. This amendment will take place 2 years after ratification. That is the Equal Rights Amendment. That's it. It's exactly the same as the 19th Amendment, with the switch out of four words. Instead of the right to vote shall not be denied or abridged, it says equality of rights shall not be denied or abridged. Again, it couldn't be simpler.
Exactly. And anyone can read that, or as you say, tweet that, and become very easily familiar with what it says. I just wanted to make the point for the member of the House in Richmond, Virginia, State House, who can't find the time.
But again, Marcello, part of the problem we have is really the inertia. The inertia is a powerful force.
Yes.
Because it is so simple. When I tell people that is the Equal Rights Amendment, they look at me like, well, okay, why hasn't it passed? I honestly can't answer that.
Yes.
So they really think there's some kind of, like, something going on that they're missing. And when I try to explain to them, and I don't like to get too lost in the weeds over it, but every generation has killed the Equal Rights Amendment for a different reason. You know, in the 1920s, it was the rule of petticoat rule, the fair petticoat rule. Then it was the madman culture. Then it was, we gave you the right to vote. I mean, you women are never satisfied. Then we get into the 70s, and the big fight then was women in the military. Check, that's not an issue anymore.
Yeah.
Unisex bathrooms, which I've always found baffling, that where people empty their bladder is the reason why they shouldn't be in the Constitution. Well, these people apparently have never been on an airplane. They've never gone to a Trader Joe's. That's been a non-issue. So we've run out of issues.
Mm.
We've run out of issues. The two issues that are brought up today that are tried to link to the Equal Rights Amendment, which is a false equivalency, is that we don't need it anymore. We absolutely do. Even if it was just symbolic, which it's not, but even if it was just symbolic, women love the Constitution, and we want to see women in the Constitution. We want to see unequivocal, not interpretive, equality. We have that right. It's time for that. Now is the time for that.
And it is, as I know I've heard you say before, it is also a family, a kitchen, home issue, you know?
It's an economic kitchen table issue. The Equal Rights Amendment is an equality. It's an equality of opportunity, equality of pay, equality of law bill. That's what it is. And you empower families. When women make what they're supposed to make on par with the men that they work with, and again, women make 78 cents on a dollar, white women make 78 cents on a dollar to a man's dollar. Women of color, black women make 69 cents. Latino women make 56 cents. You know, when you take gender disparity and then you intersect racial disparity, you know, women of color are more burdened by the lack of an Equal Rights Amendment than white women are, but white women still have 78 cents to a man's dollar. Now, the naysayers will say that, you know, that's a complicated issue, that women have families, women make different choices. They say all of that. But I say no. And the reason for that I say no is quite simple. The Economic Policy Institute has gridded for years, for decades now, the economic and all different types of women. And one of the most telling numbers that they have found is that when you take a female and a male, a boy and a girl, graduating from college, let's say they come out of UVA, where Charlottesville was both UVA, where two of my three daughters attended college.
Mm-hmm.
You take two students graduating, one male, one female, and the Economic Policy Institute tells you that the first job out of college already shows, for no other reason than gender, an 8-12% pay disparity.
Mm.
Now, people will say, well, women aren't good negotiators. Well, you know, negotiation is a dance. And when two people are negotiating, you know, if there's a bias on one side, you're automatically walking into that interview with a burden on you that the law does not protect you against.
Mm.
And But women are slaying their own dragons all through their life cycle. So to say that a woman should negotiate better, well, if she's dealing with a 50-year-old man who's in the back of his mind coming up with all kinds of reasons why he should pay her less, she's got a heavier lift, and law does not protect her from the moment she walks into that room.
And that's the point.
As a woman.
That's the point. The law does not protect her. That is the issue everyone has to understand. And that's all you're asking for.
It's all we're asking for, equal playing field. And if you have a 12% pay disparity, let's meet in the middle and say 10%. Because the number is anywhere from 8 to 12. So let's say 10%. If you have a 10% pay disparity, we talk a lot about the burden of student debt on students. Well, the burden on student debt on a female is going to be higher.
Yes.
The ability to take a job, to transfer, the better car, a more dependable car to get to work, the ability to have a better apartment, all of these things come into play. And then when we go to the second job, and they give us a 5% increase on salary over our first job, well, then the spread between the male and the female starts, because 5% of $60,000 is going to be $6,000, a lot more money than... and 5% pay increase on $50,000. So, where we start, it just goes from there. So the gap widens and widens and widens and widens. And it's an unfair disparity. And what you said before about economic issues for families, what I tell people who say we don't need the Equal Rights Amendment, I see the Equal Rights Amendment as overlapping all of the issues of women and children and families.
Yes.
And men can care about this issue too. If you have a wife who's being underpaid 78 cents on the dollar, that is your pot of money on the kitchen table.
Exactly.
That is your economy right there. That's your ability to pay your bills, to pay your rent. That's the ability to afford competent daycare. That's your ability of whether or not the female in the household is even going to choose to work. And a lot of times when a man and a woman are choosing who's going to stay home with the kids and who's going to go to work, a lot of times it's the female that stays home by default because the male has a higher learning capacity.
Mm.
I mean, we have to understand that a lot of things drive this issue, and a lot of economic issues are embedded in this issue. And when women have to work 30% longer hours to make the same money, these are women that are not home with their children. They're not home until they're working two jobs because that money's got to come somewhere. And if they're not working two jobs, then, these are the women that are getting reduced free lunches for their children. They're getting SNAP and, i.e. food stamps. When women need to go and fill their wage gap with governmental programs, that's an issue that everyone should care about.
Right.
Women deserve, we hear the narrative about, anybody who works 40 hours a week should be able to not live in poverty. Well, I would take that one step forward and say any woman who works 40 hours a week should have the same opportunity to take care of herself and her family as a man does.
Okay.
That is your issue.
All right. We are, and we don't even have time to talk about much more because I want to make certain we get your website.
Right.
There's a big event in D.C.
on
August 26th. Let us know about August 26th. September 12th, and that website again is women-matter.org. Give us that information, how we can get involved, men and women.
Well, we are having a series of fundraisers around the state for women candidates to support the Equal Rights Amendment. The first one is on the 29th of August, and it is for Candy Hilliard, who is running against Speaker William Howell, who is the obstructionist in the House.
Yes.
Delegate, who will not let the ERA out of subcommittee. We are having a fundraiser for Shannon Taylor, who is running for Commonwealth Attorney in Henrico County. We are having a fundraiser for Deborah Reck, who is an MPA, who is also running for Walter Stosch's seat, who is a Republican man who has supported the Equal Rights Amendment for 30 years.
Mm.
And unfortunately, he is retiring, and we are very concerned that person who takes his spot will not support the Equal Rights Amendment. And Deborah Webb has already said that she will unequivocally support and advocate for the Equal Rights Amendment. And we're also supporting Tony Radler, who is running against Delegate Buddy Fowler, who sits on the Privileges and Elections Committee, who has not allowed the Equal Rights Amendment to advance out of the Privileges and Elections Committee in the House of Delegates. Then we are also having a fundraiser in September for Southside candidates, for Rosalind Dance, who is a co-sponsor of our Equal Rights Amendment in the Virginia Senate, for Latrice Ard, who is running for delegate in Chesterfield, for for Sheila Bynum Coleman, who's also running for delegate. And we're also supporting then Wayne Powell and Marty Moravian, who have been very, very strong supporters of the Equal Rights Amendment. We see this as an economic issue, and we are supporting candidates to support this important economics issue for women.
Excellent. Now, give us the website and where we can get this information. Is there a specific link on which to click once you get on the website?
Women-matter.org, you will see a link to the fundraisers. You will also see a link to resources, which will give you all of the data, the congressional review study on this issue, a study on the viability of the Equal Rights Amendment. Under news, you will see all the current things. It's all there. We also have a newsletter sign up. You can sign up and get information from us on how you can help.
Excellent.
And how you can get involved and how you can call your delegate. And if you live in, or you're listening and you don't live in this state, you should still support what's going on in Virginia, because when Virginia ratifies the Equal Rights Amendment, that brings the entire country, 35 states have ratified the Equal Rights Amendment. Women who live in Connecticut, who live in Massachusetts, who live in New Hampshire, who live in California, they are waiting. I mean, New Jersey ratified the Equal Rights Amendment in 1972.
Wow.
There are women in, you know, and women are waiting for the rest of the country, i.e. Virginia, to catch up and ratify something they did almost 50 years ago.
All right. We're going to have to end it there, Eileen. We're going to have to end this segment and go to commercial, but I know you're going to stick around and stay with us for when we'll be joined by Helene Swanson. And I'll try the French, or she'll pronounce her French name for me when we get back. I love it. Helene Swanson. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Another film rental discovery.
Welcome to the Indie Film Minute. Only Lovers Left Alive is not really a vampire movie because there's no shock, no horror. According to Jim Jarmusch, the film's writer and director, and a granddaddy in the indie world, it's a love story and character study. It is, but it's also a film with a luscious look and feel, full of subtle detail and nuanced social commentary. Jarmusch clearly has a jaundiced view of the current state of humanity. He sets his film in decadent Tangiers and also in modern Detroit, where decay suits the mood of a very tired vamp. Humans are called zombies by the vampire elite, but it's dangerous to feed on them because so much corruption has tarnished their blood. Pure blood procured for cash from corrupt medical techs is treasured for its sensual delights. Surprisingly, Only Lovers Left Alive is an intellectual exercise suffused in a sensual world. It's a personal observation by one who sees beauty in the margins, appreciates intellectual humor, and yearns to share the pain inflicted upon the aesthete. No, this is not a driving vampire tale, but luscious vampire commentary. Only Lovers Left Alive, not in theaters, discovery through rental.
Welcome back to the Reasonable Voices radio talk show. My second guest today, and I'm going to try this because it's too beautiful not to, Helene de Boisier Swanson. Did I get it close, Helene?
It's Helene de Boisier Swanson, or Boisier, depending upon the pronunciation and region you are from in France. I'm from a multicultural, multiracial background.
Uh-huh.
I'm first generation American. My mother was actually truly born in America, but my grandfather was a civilian air manager and designer of the Southampton airfield, so she grew up in England during World War II, and my father is of French Trinidadian stock, being born in Trinidad, so I'm quasi-first-generation American, but I always think of myself as first-generation American, simply because my mother grew up in England during the war and came from such an English perspective in these United States. I'm really not so much interested in talking about myself, I gotta tell you the truth.
All right, well, I was going to ask you a question. You are also the founder of Katrina's Dream. Can you tell us about
that's exactly where I was going to be going.
Okay.
And that's where my passion lies. is in the ministry of Katrina's Dream and the work here to promote the full inclusion of women in the church and in society and other social justice issue programs. So I will go a little bit into saying that I have worked for a rather well-known attorney back in his day by the name of Melvin M. Belli, also nicknamed the King of Torts.
Yes.
And when I met my husband, and he's unfortunately passed away now, William Swanson, one of the first things I learned when we agreed to get married was that his mother was one of the Philadelphia 11.
Uh-huh.
The Philadelphia 11 were a group of women who were irregularly ordained, meaning at the time of their ordination, there was no canon law that permitted for women to be priests. So they were irregularly ordained in the Episcopal Church, making them the first recognized women of the Anglican Communion.
Wow.
And, so to go on, I met his mom and dad and his mother, Katrina, whom our organization is named after, and I hit it right off. She was a staunch feminist. She really believed that women were equal. But she didn't come to that place of being a woman priest as a woman's liver. It actually was a reversal. She and my father-in-law, who's also an Episcopal priest, had gone off to Botswana, Africa, where she learned there that many tribal leaders, chieftains, when they would convert over to Christianity, would believe that it meant that they could force young girls into having sexual favors with them in return for offering them the Holy Communion.
Oh, my
gosh. And that was to her a shocking thing. And it made her think, well, this is what's going on in Africa. What's taking place in America? And at that time, that would have been 1966, 67, 68. And she came back to the United States with a burning passion to move the women's rights movement forward, not only just in society and in the church. And she felt that her duty, her calling to serve Jesus, will be that women should be priests. And at the same time, America was really taking off with the Equal Rights Amendment.
Uh-huh.
So she and a total of 10 women and their supporters gathered in secret, became ordained, and now we're going to where I come in.
Uh-huh.
I used to work for Melvin Belli. She asked that I take my legal skills and transfer them over to promoting the passage of the ERA. And naively, and I say naively, I thought this was going to be an easy thing. My mother had been involved in the ERA efforts in New York City as a child, so I knew the arguments well. My mother attended many meetings of Bella Abzug and Gloria Steinem. My mother was friends with Eleanor Roosevelt, things like that. So I was always cultivated to be a strong woman. So naturally, when she said do this, I had looked at what was going on in our society, and I've seen so much progress that, oh, the fathers are going to be simple.
Piece of cake. Yeah.
Yeah, piece of cake. Yes, exactly. I was like, everybody's for women's rights. It's not a big deal. Everybody thinks we're equal. We are equal. We can do the same job as men. We're off in the military now. All the arguments have been pretty much come to pass, and as those that Phyllis Schlafly and company have put out there over a course of time, we're no longer issues. So how hard could this be? Stalker, it has been difficult.
Yes.
So difficult, it is almost a joke, but truly a sadness. So I knocked on a lot of doors, met a congressman, now Senator Tammy Baldwin. She said if I could show that the church would support the passage of the ERA, she'd be willing to write a resolution. And that resolution is a resolution that's calling for the three-state strategy.
Yes.
Because unfortunately, the ERA in the 80s, due to some misinformation spread by the Phyllis Schlafly crowd, had died a miserable death. But the Madison Amendment, which took 203 years to go through, had been challenged. The Supreme Court ruled you could not place a time bar on the ERA. And now that you can no longer see the time bar, there's a resolutions in both the Senate, that's SJ-15 for the Senate, and HJ-51 for the House,
mm-hmm.
that call for the removal of the bar.
Yes.
So Fannie wrote this resolution, our letter of endorsement was included, and naturally, once again, I go, ah, I'm off the hook. I can go back to living a simple life in the Bay Area.
No.
And I'm good. So everybody's going to sign on. But again, that is not been the case.
That is not
it's
what happened.
It's an uphill battle because so many are one. The younger folks, and I'm not that old, but I'm not that young. I'm right in between. I'm 51.
Mm-hmm.
Younger kids like who would fall into category I fell into. This is a no-brainer. We have our rights. What's the big deal?
Yes.
They have no idea of what's going on. They're not educated to the fact that women don't have equal rights. They believe that every woman does. So it's an education that's taking place. And so that's the first thing. And then there's the older folks who somehow feel that they never got the message that it didn't pass. Somehow they know of the ERA, but they've assumed that is the, that's the past, and what are we talking about? Don't we have our rights? There's that big education gap. So what happened is when I saw there was a lack of education, and then unfortunately, the news media, and I know you're a news person.
Yes.
been unreluctant to cover the issue. And rather than cover it, it gets buried.
Now, what about Senator Elizabeth Warren, who has talked so much, of course, opposed to what the Wall Street banks did to our economy, but also talking about gender inequality, economic, at least, gender inequality?
But to me, and I'm not, and I love Elizabeth Warren, so mm-hmm. that's okay. Everyone skirts about the wording.
Uh-huh.
They don't come out and straight say ERA. They'll say women's rights. Because they're all tied to things like Lilly Ledbetter, which has no teeth.
Gotcha.
They tie to legislation versus a constitutional amendment. And there's not one bill out there that has any teeth until we have the Equal Rights Amendment.
I see. I hear you. That's an excellent point. Absolutely true.
And
absolutely true.
One party going, ah, we're this, we're that, and then the other party going, we're for women. But unless you're saying the ERA, you're not giving any teeth to what needs to be done.
Gotcha. All right. Well, then let's talk about what you are doing. You are walking from California to Washington, D.C. to promote to the U.S. Capitol the passage of the Equal Rights Amendment. Because as you say, until it's a law, it's nice words, but it's not a law until it's in the Constitution.
Well, yes. I mean, unfortunately, yes, that's correct. But what I'm saying is that we can all strive for small bits of legislation, Equal Pay Act, this and that, and they all sound good.
Mm-hmm.
But when they get challenged, just as in the Walmart versus Dukes case.
Yes.
The Constitution does not prohibit discrimination against women.
And
it does not.
And we have Supreme Court justices who have already sworn to that truth.
Right. So we need the ERA if we want to have the legislation that is oh so important to guarantee that women are not discriminated against
mm-hmm.
to have teeth. So basically what I've been doing is I started off on March 8th, 2014,
mm-hmm.
That's last year,
mm-hmm.
which would be International Women's Day, leading from the San Francisco Golden Gate Bridge to walk across the country, visiting U.S. senators and representatives in each state, calling for them to co-sponsor the resolutions that I referred to earlier,
mm-hmm.
now in this Congress known as SJ-15, and HJ-51.
Yes.
And then in each state, and in states that have not been working towards ratifying the ERA, locating women organizations, men too, because it's not really just about women.
Exactly.
It's promoted as It's promoted as a woman's rights amendment, but it really affects everyone. Because the concept of when one is not equal, none are equal,
yes,
really applies here.
Yes.
When you have an uneven weight distribution placed on one, it actually also places an uneven weight distribution on the other.
Exactly.
And men are suffering too.
Exactly.
And that's something that people don't talk about, because the ERA, once again, there's a lot of misconception regarding what it's about. And I'm going to speak to two different circumstances regarding how it affects men, because most everyone is very familiar with how women are oppressed.
Yes.
And I think it's equally important to talk about how men are affected by this as well.
Yes.
And we're going to go to a case called Nagin versus INS.
Mm-hmm.
It was 1978 that this case came to be. And basically what happens is, man is in Vietnam, has a child, brings the child back to the United States. Child does not know the mother or her family, grows up here, and unfortunately gets involved in a criminal matter, prosecuted, found guilty, goes off to prison, has a co-defendant. Now they're being released.
Mm.
Co-defendant released, but now he won't be. And the reason is, INS has policy, procedures, codes, regulations that state that the relationship between a mother and child is superior to that of a father. The father goes, what? Not possible. No, men must naturalize your children, and women don't have to. He challenges it, and the Supreme Court ruled that the INS codes have standing. Which means that they're putting into society that men don't have to be responsible other than to a paycheck to take care of their children. That everything else falls on women. And I think when you put those kind of concepts out, there's a lot of men out there that really enjoy going to baseball games,
yes,
see their sons play, you know, or watch their daughters at the ballet. And when you put the kind of messaging that men are nothing more than a wallet,
yes,
that's a really sad statement for family value.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay.
Tell me,
yes.
I'm just wondering one quick thing. I know you have another point you want to make, and we have time for that. But I'm also wondering, I don't think we've mentioned today in either segment, that women also, for medical treatment, for visiting the doctor, for medical insurance, are also discriminated in their health care. Is that not true?
Yes. Even in lawsuits, now I say this from the point and perspective of having worked for with a personal injury again, Melvin Bella.
Exactly.
And here's an example of discrimination again with women and men. And we're going to talk about a typical situation. Two children go to a party, one boy, one girl. Dog bites the boy, dog bites the girl.
Hmm.
The dog bites the girl on the face and the boy on the face.
Mm-hmm.
Typically, the boy's case is worth very little, because he is not valued for his looks, but for his ability to earn money, which is not tied to his looks.
Oh.
The boy's case will settle very low, whereas with the girl, her value is placed on her sexual marketability to mate well, and if she's not attractive, she will not marry well. And so you actually make more money off of a girl being bit by a dog than you do by a boy.
And we're talking 2015 here.
Yes, and that's just sad.
Oh,
now, the other thing is another sad circumstance is, and people are not aware of this as well, let's say a single father, head of household, as well as a mother, head of household. Say the exact same case scenario. They're driving down the road, drunk driver hits them, father dies in his car, mother dies in her car.
Mm.
Now remember, they're both single parent head of household.
Yes.
The family of the single mother's head of household will not fare well, because the actuary tables are based upon her income level.
Ugh, of course, gee.
See what I'm saying?
I got you.
And so, they're both very important. This is not taking away from men in any way, shape, or form, is it?
No, they're just both single parents.
Men are not out there. There's a number of men out toddler or a single parent heads of household.
Yes.
But if something happened to them, their families will be better taken care of. You see, so it's so systemic. I can go on.
And on and on, it seems.
I can point out so many different variables. But here, let's go back to that men's issue again.
Yes.
And this is a sad statement. Again, now we have the military, right? We're
yes.
not going to say about women going in or out, that number, no.
Yes.
But, you know, you're a man, you go into the military, and there's a number of different roles you can get trained for. Some can learn how to be snipers and or MPs, and that transfers being in a police department.
Yes.
Others learn how to be mechanics, and they can go on and become a mechanic, or they learn how to fix the airplanes and the helicopters. They go up to be, you know, to become aeronautics engineers or mechanics. But now those that go into the medical profession are finding that when they get out, there are no jobs for them. Yes, they will be hired at hospitals, primarily because of the following three reasons. One, many hospitals are union.
Yeah.
Two, they need a man to do the physical lifting because women aren't always as strong as men in some cases. Or three, in psychiatric units, you might need someone physically stronger to subdue a patient.
Mm.
But when it comes to the doctor's office or clinic, it's cheaper to hire two women than one man. So no matter how well qualified he is, because they would pay him more by our societal rules,
yes,
it is cheaper to hire two women. So that's another form of the unfair burden and the pay disparity between the sexes.
And the motivation for those men who still need it to realize, as you say, if one is not equal, neither are.
The ERA is going to have an impact on women substantially.
Yes.
But there are subtle ways in which it is affecting men. The ones on women are much more obvious.
Yes.
It's obvious because of the pay disparity, how it affects women. And, I mean, that's obvious because when it comes to having an apartment, whether you're a single woman or a single woman with children or a two-parent family, women get paid a lot less, but the rent, no matter what sex you are, is going to be $100 or $1,000 or $10,000 a month, depending upon where you live, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But you, no matter where you live, they do not say, oh, woman, you get a discount. Oh, that banana, it should be 77 cents. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So not only are women unable to meet their economic needs because they don't buy, they can't afford things, but it also affects, at the end of the day, your Social Security. Everybody goes, oh, no, the Social Security issue has been handled. No, not true.
Mm.
Because you see, when women are paying less into Social Security because they're earning less,
yes,
that means they have less to live on.
Yes.
So right now, the studies have shown 75% of our elderly senior citizens are living below the poverty line.
Yes.
And 9% of that 75% are women because they never were able to pay into security the same amount that their male counterpart would have.
Because they were never paid an equal income.
So it affects the young. It affects the old. It affects men. It affects women. And obviously it affects our children, our youth, because with men, an unfair burden is placed on them in one way, to be seen only as a wallet.
Hmm.
And women are being viewed only as
a pretty face.
Because, now, example, you're a two-parent household, mom and dad, okay? Mom stays at home because she can't get paid what she's worth, and dad is going to hold two jobs.
Hmm.
What do you think that does to men's health and their... Do you think there might be any correlation between the fact that men die about 10 to 15 years before women because there's an unfair burden because they're working 40, 60, 70 hours a week because women cannot go out to work and afford the health care? When you're getting paid well, you're going to have, it's so involved, it's so systemic. And everybody will, although these are tangential issues, but unless people start seeing societal issues, not just the immediate, but look at how it's affecting society in the whole, how it's not just one issue, but every issue in the United States has to do with the ERA, And I can, if you can bring up any issue, and I will show you the correlation.
All right, we're going to have to stop there, but I certainly hear your point, Helene. This has been an amazing show and incredibly informative. I hope to speak to you again on radio, but we must run for now. Tell us, how can we...
Wait.
Go ahead.
Okay, so what we can all do is,
yes.
I am going to ask that everyone come or at least check out the Facebook event, which you can find on my website.
Okay.
And my website is www.katrinasdream.org to learn about my 7,000 miles plus walk across the United States, which is culminating in Washington, D.C. on August 26th. My friend and colleague Eileen Davis will be speaking there. A number of wonderful advocates across the country are flying in to speak at this rally. They'll be joining me at St. Stephen's of the Incarnation in D.C. to walk the last 4 miles to the National Mall, the Upper Senate Park area, where we will rally and talk for a couple of moments or so. And then the following day, a group called ERA Action is putting together a lobbying day. So it's actually a 2-day event on August 26th and August 27th. The 26th is the walk and rally. The 27th is the day of action. It's in Washington, D.C. All you have to do is Google ERA Walk to U.S. Capitol, and you'll find everything you need to know about the event. Or just go once again to the website, katrinasdream.org. And you'll find a lot about it.
Fantastic. That was exactly what I was going to ask you to do. We must run, but it's been a glorious show with both you ladies. Helene de Boissière Swanson. Close?
That's wonderful.
Okay. Thank you, and you are wonderful. Tell Eileen she is also. I thank you both for being on the show. We will be in touch. Bye now, and all the best to you. All the best to you at the end of the month in D.C. I'll be there. Bye now.
All right. Bye.
Stay with us as we'll be right back with a final comment from The Reasonable Voice.
And now, another film rental discovery.
Welcome to the Indie Film Minute. Shin Bet are initials for Israel's dreaded top secret internal security service known as Shabat. Charged with gathering West Bank and Gaza intelligence, protecting high-ranking individuals, exposing terrorist cells, and interrogating terrorist suspects. Their brutal methodology has been uncompromising and controversial. For his Academy Award-nominated documentary film, The Gatekeepers, Dror Morey somehow persuaded all 6 living former directors of Shin Bet to do candid on-camera interviews. These men are extraordinarily open to sharing their past deeds and current moral quandaries. There is no morality in dealing with terrorism, says one. One man's terrorist is another man's freedom fighter, says another. Most eye-opening of all, they are blunt in their opinion that the Israeli-Palestinian conflict will not be solved militarily. The Gatekeepers is a truly grim assessment of the seemingly endless and irresolvable Israeli-Palestinian conflict. Yet, the very willingness of these truly tough men to openly reassess their traditional tactics offers a faintly reassuring promise that peace may become possible. The Gatekeepers, not in theaters, discovery through rental.
Hello, I'm Marcello Rolando, the Reasonable Voice, thanking you for becoming one of the reasonable voices heard round the world. Our polarized story. Stole and sold. Julian Bond, the great gentleman civil rights warrior, came from those stole and sold. To guarantee the absence of any middle-class bridge between wealthy plantation owners and the human beings they enslaved. Now, free at last, Bond fights for human rights through our rallies and every step we walk in his shoes for equality. This is our story. Forcing a raped female of any age to give birth because you profess pro-life brings with it responsibility for both mother and child.
Pro-life can't end with birth, but is rather self-obligated to fill life abundantly with affordable health care, superior nutrition, and quality education. If not the defender of human rights for women and children, then pro-life lacks the substance of even a flippant soundbite by pretend religious and faux patriots. This is our story. Helene de Boisier Swanson, founder of Katrina's Dream, like Alice Paul, Reverend Katrina Martha Van Astner Swanson, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., Eileen Davis of women-matter.org, Andrea Miller of peopledemandingaction.org, the King of Torts, Melvin Mouron-Belly, and former NAACP Chairman Julian Bond, is now marching for the equality guaranteed by American citizenship to trump gender, voting, and economic inequality, and violent cultural fanatics in both small localities and our halls of injustice. This is our story. From California's Bay Bridge, past the People's White House, to the U.S. Capitol, Helene Swanson marches for the entire Global League of Women Enduring Spousal Abuse, Human Trafficking, Inequitable Economic Opportunity, Food Deserts, and Degrading Minimum Wages. Helene inspires us to march for all who are still being raped by the masses of Wall Street plantations, K Street Congresses, Madison Avenue pimps, courtyards of open carry white supremacists, and the evils of mass incarceration. She marches for those continually economically and politically assaulted by the greed of men needing to control through the torture and rape of a falsely accused Freddie Gray or a defenseless Kayla Mueller. How can we transcend our current events wedded to our history without our herstory? What is our story now? Polarization or still stole and sold by real-time polls? Until Americans celebrate every month as All Human Rights for All Human Beings Matter Month, the very life of Earth is threatened. Marching united for ERA ratification, with hands raised, hearts full, and voices resounding for equality, is justice for all. Equality is not separate but equal issues of poverty, gender, race, voting rights, peculiar institutions, flags, C Street house, religion, economy, middle class, focus groups, sexual preferences, politics, or even our too seldom read but often misquoted and misinterpreted Bill of Rights, media massaged to disconnect the ties that bind. The issues of our story coalesce the very moment we the people transform our moneyed, manipulated division into a people showering each other with a commonwealth of sense, decency, civility, and reason. This is our story. While America won its freedom 239 years ago, those stole and sold have only been free for 150 years, an 89-year gap whose rippling effect is still a tragic crevasse of bullying in our streets, schools, neighborhoods, communications, and workplaces. The home of the brave is yet free enough to embrace equality for all of its citizens, from those from whom we stole America to those who, granted voting privileges merely 95 years ago, still giving lives to our nation and its wars every day. And still, the Equal Rights Amendment has not been ratified by 38 states needed to make it and the equality of women a legal guarantee in the United States Constitution. Who are you state representatives who refuse to ratify the ERA? Do you favor Trump's answers over Megyn Kelly's questions? Do you not know that women are twice as likely to suffer from Alzheimer's disease? Do you not care how doctors, judges, and employers diagnose, equivocate, and appraise women? Caring about aging baby boomers of both sexes and all women in our lives implores us to march to the Capitol Wednesday, August 26, 2015, to remind politicians 52% of us are still denied constitutional equality. Join us. Become one of the reasonable voices heard round the world. Thank you.
Thank you for continuing to listen to, support, and share the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio with family and friends, especially online. We enjoy hearing from you, and in response, yes, we are now accepting new company and business advertisers and welcoming organizations seeking to be one of our sponsors. So please do continue to email us at thereasonablevoice@gmail.com. However, if you prefer to simply make a donation, your donations are greatly appreciated and can be made through PayPal by clicking on the donate button found at the top of the homepage of the Reasonable Voice. Website.
Thank you for joining us today to make every day as reasonable as possible. We hope you will download and share our downloadable podcasts. I'm Marcello Rolando, the Reasonable Voice, hoping you will become one of the reasonable voices heard round the world.